All right, welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, here with producer Nate Vaughn at Vikings Entertainment Network Studios at Winter Park in the middle of the quietest period of the NFL calendar. The great content and news-making machine that is the NFL has yet to find a way to fill this part of the calendar with something related to the NFL, Nate.
Yeah, that was the NFL right there. Right now is silence.
Right, and it's the only time the NFL sounds like this. Because there are 52 weeks in a year, and so let's call it 5 weeks here where there are no offseason programs, no mini camps, no practices, no drafts, no combines, no pro days, no playoffs, no games. 52 minus 5, private school math, that's 47. So for the other 47 weeks, the NFL is a nonstop headline-making entertainment machine. But for these 5 weeks, it's a little quiet, but we still have stuff to talk about. And in today's Wobcast, we're going to talk about the new Vikings Stadium. U.S. Bank Stadium is what we're going to call it, because that great company has definitely earned the right for us to call it that. We're going to talk about Vikings games on YouTube, and we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. But we're going to start with U.S. Bank Stadium because, Nate, substantial completion has occurred.
Substantial.
Right.
Is there a number you can attach to substantial that, you know, once you reach this number, it is officially substantially completed?
I don't know. I think it's more about functionality. I think it's like once you can have people come in and be safe and then you can use the building for what it's intended to be used for, that is substantial completion. It's an actual technical construction term.
Interesting.
Yeah, substantial completion. Essentially, right now at U.S. Bank Stadium, you can have a concert, you can have a football game, you can have a Final Four. You could technically do it right now. So substantial completion has happened. The Vikings and Mortenson Construction and the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority together released a statement last week saying that substantial completion has occurred and the building is open for business. So that's good news. 6 weeks ahead of schedule. So bravo to the more than 8,000 individuals who were on that site over the last couple of years constructing the building. They got it done ahead of schedule, so that was good news. Here are some of the numbers, Nate, on the stadium.
Run some of these numbers by me, please.
All right. Prepare your mind to be blown.
Okay.
1.75 million square feet. And just think about, like, your apartments that you've lived in, your dorms, the houses maybe that, you know, people listening are living in, and like what your square footage is, and think about that, you know?
You could fit a few of my apartments in U.S. Bank Stadium.
Right, yeah. Yes. So 1.75 million square feet. 1.1 billion is the approximate price tag on it, or what it costs to build it. 70,000 seats.
Again, 1.1 billion. About a few of my apartments.
Right, you could fit, right.
Rent for a few months.
Right. Five of the largest pivoting glass doors in the world. 60% ETFE roof, which is the clear substance or clear material that comprises a lot of the roof of U.S. Bank Stadium. 2,000 flat screen TVs. Is that more than you have in your apartment?
Yeah. Okay. It's about 1,999 more TVs okay. than I have in my apartment.
All right, yep. First NFL stadium built with LED lighting. Like, I remember when it was a big deal when you had LED Christmas lights on your house. Like, your dad's like, hey, guys, got the LED Christmas lights this year. Yeah, well, basically,
we built a stadium with Christmas lights.
With LED lights, yeah. Closest seats and suites to the playing surface in the league. So, cool. A few cool facts about U.S. Bank Stadium. Some dates to remember. Ribbon cutting, July 22nd. Public open houses on July 23rd and 24th. AC Milan and Chelsea FC will play a friendly, as you call it in soccer, on August 3rd. Which actually, I don't know if it's a friendly, because isn't it part of like some cup or some tournament? So it might not really be a friendly. It might actually be an unfriendly, but they're going to be nice to each other because they're guests in our house, and you should always be nice when you're a guest in someone's house. Luke Bryan for country fans and Metallica for rock and roll fans will be playing. Luke Bryan on August 19th, Metallica on August 20th. The first Vikings game will be a preseason game at US Bank Stadium. That will be Sunday, August 28th against the Chargers. And then the first regular season game will be week two, Sunday Night Football, Vikings hosting the Green Bay Packers. So a few numbers of note and a few dates to keep in mind related to US Bank Stadium. Now that substantial completion has occurred and that building is open for business. A different topic but related, Nate, is that Egan is officially happening for the Vikings as their city council voted and approved the Vikings move to their city and to that site, the old Northwest Airlines site. So now I will be including the Egan City Council on my gasoline invoice every month as I travel across the Twin Cities metro area to get to and from work every day.
So. All I can say is that I'm very excited about it because that makes my commute much shorter than it is now.
Yeah, we call that, you're basically, you know, being where you are, you know, we call that, you know, you're a driver sandwich away from the new facility. That's you know, people who play
right
golf
over,
would
right
say
over
that.
The river.
Right. So, so that's good for you. We're really happy for you. Speaking of the new stadium, we have a clip here from our friends at the NFL Network, specifically former NFL quarterback David Carr and former NFL defensive lineman Jamie Dukes, talking about the pressures, as they call it, of playing in a new stadium. And the reason these two are talking about it is they each played for a team that opened up a new stadium. David Carr was the quarterback of the Houston Texans when they were an expansion team and they opened up Reliant Stadium, which is what it was called back then. And then Jamie Dukes played for the Atlanta Falcons when the Falcons moved into the Georgia Dome. Now, one thing about this clip that you're going to listen to is I think that Jamie Dukes and David Carr need to listen to the first part of the Wobcast. They need to know more about the stadium. I think they think it's an outdoor stadium.
Yeah. About halfway through there, they get a little confused.
But they do have a good perspective on opening a new building and all that goes into it. So we got to send the Wobcast to those guys in case they're not listening, right?
Yep. We'll just send them a link real quick.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. But here's Jamie Dukes and David Carr talking about playing in a new stadium.
All right, these guys, they know a thing or two about playing in a brand new stadium. David, you played the first ever game in Houston's Reliant Stadium, and now known as NRG. And Jamie, the first ever game at the Georgia Dome. Now, we saw how things are going on at US Bank Stadium, a little open-air element in Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes, also the land of where all their skyscrapers are connected because it gets pretty doggone cold.
Yeah, a lot of tunnels there. A lot of tunnels. And rightfully so. I was a little nervous for him last year, obviously, playing outside the entire year. It could have got bad. Obviously, we know how cold it can get. So, but playing in a new stadium is a lot of fun, man. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of energy there. Obviously, the fans are going to come in all pumped. They're going to get to see new digs. Mike Zimmer's definitely going to find some home field advantage with how the wind comes through there and whatever they can do. Right. So it's going to be pretty, because I remember we used to do the same thing, because if it was really hot outside, you know, we change what uniforms we'd wear, try and get in a little edge on the opposing team, open the dome, close the dome. So it's a fun deal. I love it.
Well, and the key part for me is I'm just glad somebody's playing football outside. Football is supposed to be played outside.
He said it. It's pretty cool.
It's just, you know, and I'm okay with the roof closing, but I mean, but it's supposed to be played outside.
I agree with
and so that's
you.
What
it
feels I like
different.
About
it's a totally different
you mentioned
feel.
The Georgia Dome. I mean, that was like the weirdest thing. I mean, here we're in the South playing in a dome.
It's like the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It's like you get down there, 11 o'clock, get ready to cover a game, and you exit the game, and it's like, I missed all this sunshine. What happened here?
Yeah.
They could be playing outside, but clearly they're not. Now, is it a little bit different for Minnesota because they're going to be opening up their brand new stadium coming off a division championship? That's pretty big news
right there.
Well,
we didn't have a team that was coming off a division championship. We were coming off anything. So coming in there, it's a little bit different feel. But, yeah, they're going to be hyped. It's a great way to start a new stadium. Obviously, your ticket sales are going to be great.
Yeah, does that put wind in the sales?
Yeah, it does, because think about it. I mean, there was an energy, as you can imagine, going in. I remember going in. I mean, I think the first play of the game for us offensively was a touchdown to Michael Haynes. I want to say it's a Chris Miller 80-something yard ball.
My first completion was a touchdown, so it was like a way to start it, man.
So there is a certain energy that you have. And then from the player's perspective, as you look inside here, you see, you know, the players' digs are nice.
Yeah.
Because we were coming from Fulton County Stadium, which was a baseball stadium that they retrofitted to play football.
Across from the Ramada.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So
you stayed in that Ramada.
Just to get predictable, what kind of rushing yards do you think Adrian Peterson is going to have in that new stadium? You think he's going to surpass 2,000 yards like he says
that's
he
gonna
is?
Be hard.
Because
I'd like to see it.
Pressure is on, but if
I'd
somebody
love to see
can
it.
Do
I
it.
Love watching him run.
I know.
So,
they bought Andre Smith in there, the big kid from Cincinnati, and He's a heck of a road grader when it comes to running the football. Yeah. It would not surprise me. And if somehow they find a way to get him and Loadhold on the same offense line, I don't know exactly what their final recipe is going to be, but it's going to be a mammoth offensive line.
If it's going to be cold, run the rock.
That's yeah. right.
And I don't know about you guys, but Adrian Peterson says he's going to play till he's 40 years old. And he's going to have to do it now in some inclement conditions because it gets a little cold there in
He'll
Minnesota.
Be in Saskatchewan at 40, though.
Yeah, he'll be playing for the Rough Riders. And, I'm no schedule maker, but how about this? They open up the brand-new stadium week two against, of all teams, the team they edged out for the division just a year ago.
That'll be a good one.
Those Green Bay Packers. You think Aaron Rodgers and company are going to be playing with a little bit of chip on their shoulder week two? That's right.
A cool thing happening for the NFL. They're going to be putting some games on YouTube. So for those of you who want to go back and look at historic moments in Vikings history or rewatch a cool game that you can remember watching but want to see again or that you didn't get to see that you'd like to see, YouTube is going to be your answer.
And we're not talking about like rips that are illegally put on YouTube. Like, like a lot of fans will rip content like from team websites or like broadcasts of the games and then put them on YouTube. These are going to be the real deal.
Yes. League sanctioned, like the actual broadcast, right?
Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. So, which is really cool because I think, you know, for a lot of fans, you tend to like certain broadcasters better than others. So, like, for example, if I was a big fan of Pat Summerall and John Madden, I thought that was a great team. And so you can go back to the mid-90s and listen to some of those Cowboys and Niners games, you know, where that Madden and Summerall were doing. That would be cool. But anyway, so the deal that the NFL is doing, though, here, Nate, and you're going to explain it a little more, is the league is giving fans a vote on the three games that their team has been a part of that should go up onto YouTube so people can go back and watch them.
That's right. So they're giving fans a list of five games. Fans vote on those, narrows it down to the three games that will be posted on YouTube.com.
Right. So this leads to a natural debate or talking point is which Vikings games should be on the YouTube channel, the NFL's YouTube channel, right?
Right. And they've taken the liberty of listing the five games.
All right. So what do we got?
Okay, well, the first one listed, it looks like these are in chronological order. Mm-hmm. So we start in 1978, December 3rd, against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Which I'm glad they're doing because that was the glory days of the Vikings, so to speak. And there are a lot of Vikings fans who grew up or became Vikings fans in that era. So I'm glad
in the late 60s, 70s,
So I'm glad there's some representation. So this game is December 3rd, 1978 against the Eagles.
I'll actually just defer to the excellently penned Vikings.com article about this.
All right.
For descriptions of the games.
There we go.
Because I think they're spot on. And because I was not alive in 1978.
No, you were not.
The eventual NFC Central champion Vikings hosted Philadelphia in the season's final home game. Hall of Fame quarterback Fran Tarkenton led the Vikings to a 28-27 comeback victory, what ended up being his final NFL season. Your thoughts, Wabi?
Good one. I think there are so many to choose from in this era that it'd be hard to go wrong, and I'm sure the league was dealing with some broadcast quality and availability issues.
Yeah, they probably don't have a handful of games that happened you know, in that time frame.
There were some other really cool playoff games in that era, some title games, you know, NFC championship games that the Vikings won, you know, other ones. But this is a good one. And as it says, Hall of Fame quarterback Fran Tarkenton led the Vikings to what was a very close one-point victory and what ended up being his final NFL season. So it's Fran Tarkenton's final season. How can you not want to watch that?
Number two, January 9th, 1988 at San Francisco against the 49ers, a divisional playoff game. After a win at New Orleans to start the 1987 postseason, the Vikings upset the San Francisco 49ers to advance to the NFC Championship game. The Vikings intercepted passes from both Joe Montana and Steve Young. Not a lot of teams can say they did that in the
probably
same game.
Probably not, no.
En route to the 36-24 win, Anthony Carter led the way for the Vikings with 227 receiving yards.
AC.
I think I had him on my fantasy team for that game.
I bet you did very well.
Yeah, that I did.
In 1988. Now, everyone went to Candlestick Park talking about Jerry Rice, but they left talking about Anthony Carter.
Number three. Oh,
that one thing on that. That was like the Vikings playoff run that year ended in like heartbreaking fashion. That's an underrated heartbreaking loss to the Redskins because there were some plays that happened at the end of the game. We're not going to call anyone out that were routine plays that didn't happen. But the Vikings beating New Orleans and then beating San Francisco was that was like an unbelievably upset, riddled playoff run by the Vikings. So kind of a cool game to put on there. I like it.
Number three, December 1st, 1994 against the Chicago Bears. Vikings hosted the Bears in a Thursday night football game that failed to disappoint. Chris Carter scored the go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter that was then matched with a Chicago field goal, sent the game into overtime. Carter continued his clutch performance with a 65-yard game-winning touchdown to seal the deal for the Vikings.
This, you're going to think I'm making this up, but I'm not. I think what I remember about this game is that that touchdown by Chris Carter, or maybe another touchdown in the game by Chris Carter, he put a double move on some Chicago defensive back that was an unbelievable move. So I am going to make a note to, if this game is voted in, to watch that game to see if I'm right about that.
Check out the All-22.
I think he put on an unbelievable double move on a cornerback to score one of his touchdowns. So kind of cool to watch one of the greatest of all time in Vikings history, Chris Carter, you know, watch him play in his heyday, December 1st, 1994. That could be a cool one to watch.
Number four, November 26th, 1998 at Dallas Cowboys. That date sounds like it might be around Thanksgiving. Well, it was exactly Thanksgiving that year. Randy Moss had the best performance of his rookie season on that day, and it's one that the Cowboys assistant Mike Zimmer, you might have heard of him. He'll probably like to forget that game as a Cowboys assistant.
He will not vote for this game.
Right. All three of Moss's catches were touchdowns, yes, and each were over 50 yards. Moss finished the day with 163 yards and three touchdowns, obviously, in the Vikings' 46-36 win on Thanksgiving Day.
How good were the Fox TV executives feeling about this game?
I think they were pretty satisfied with their choice.
The Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving against the phenom Randy Moss, who at this point of the season, which you're basically three quarters of the way through the season at Thanksgiving. So I mean, everyone knows the greatness of Randy Moss's rookie season by now. So it's the Dallas Cowboys, America's team. On Thanksgiving, captive audiences all across the country watching, rookie phenom wide receiver Randy Moss, and a game that was 46-36. So the scoring was nonstop. I mean, that was probably a ratings bonanza for Fox.
Finally, December 30th, 2012, so a bit more recent, against the Green Bay Packers. You might recall the win and in chance from your favorite broadcaster, Paul Allen, that day. Adrian Peterson fell short of the single-season rushing record, but helped the Vikings earn what mattered most that day, a playoff berth.
Yep.
Blair Walsh, in his rookie season, nailed a 29-yard field goal as time expired, put the Vikings in the playoffs. Adrian led the way with 199 yards, giving him the second-highest single-season output in NFL history.
Pretty cool day.
Pretty cool day.
That was a fun day.
I remember the end of that season, Adrian. Well, I mean, this was probably one of his worst games at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Just had 200-yard games like it was nothing.
Right. Super fun moment. The punter to Michael Jenkins catch late in the fourth quarter to set up the game-winning score. Adrian dashing toward history. No-brainer to put this game on there, and I will not be surprised if this game gets the most votes on this list. Although the 98 game where the best rookie wide receiver season of all time, the best game within that season is this Thanksgiving Day game that's on the list too, so that could garner a lot of votes as well.
It doesn't hurt that it's the most recent, and it also doesn't hurt that it's against the Packers.
Right.
And two things very much in the favor of that game. So what do you think of those five, Wobby?
Pretty good.
Are you satisfied with that list?
Yeah, I would say I'm satisfied, but I have three others that you could put on there, and I don't know which ones you'd replace. But there was a game against the Rams in 1976 that was the NFC Championship game, and I believe that was the one that was played in the mud. Like, it was super muddy, and a lot of people will remember that. So if there's quality broadcast footage of that, I think that one could possibly have gone on the list.
Interestingly enough, I was just going through footage of that game yesterday, working on a few projects, we go through a lot of historic footage. Mm-hmm. That game is one of the first games we think of when we go to historic footage, just because the visuals are
it's amazing.
Freezing, it's muddy, it's and the Vikings are victorious.
Right. So that one you could put on there, but again, they may have some trouble with the, with getting a quality broadcast. That might be why they didn't put it on there. But there are two other from the same season that I wanna make note of that they could have put on here. The 2007 season, Adrian Peterson's rookie year, where in the game at Soldier Field, Adrian ran for 224 yards, but there were eight touchdowns in that game, and all eight of them were for 33 yards or longer.
Lots of big plays.
Yeah.
All big plays.
And then Ryan Longwell hit the game-winning field goal.
Right.
Which was a 55-yarder at Soldier Field in the wind. So I thought that was an incredibly dramatic game. Again, Adrian Peterson off to a great start in his rookie season. Had a great game. Could be a fun one to watch. And then who wouldn't want to watch the 296? Adrian goes for 296 against Norv and the Chargers.
I was going to say offensive coordinator Norv Turner might not want to watch that.
Yeah, he won't vote for that one. But the thing with that game is, the flaw in that game is that the first half was soups boring. It was like awful. And it ended with Antonio Cromartie handling a Ryan Longwell missed field goal and returning it 109 yards for an NFL record longest touchdown play, longest play. So that was a little redundant. To call a 109-yard play the longest touchdown play, you don't have to say touchdown, because if it's 109 yards, it has to be a touchdown, right?
That's a good point.
There's no way it could be 109 yards without being a touchdown. So
good point. I don't like redundancies, so thank you for pointing that out.
Get rid of that. Go to Vikings.com, Vikings fans. Figure out how to go and vote for your favorite games. They're going to be up on YouTube, and you'll be able to watch those games in full, including the actual broadcast from that point in time.
Voting ends, by the way, on June 26th, so you have very few days left.
We're coming right up on that.
Yeah, so fire up your DSL, your internet browsers, your Netscape Navigator. And get to work.
Napster. Because it's June 23rd right now, so you got to get moving on that. All right.
Sounds like you have your weekend plans set.
I do, for sure. I'm venturing into enemy territory this weekend, actually.
Is that right?
Going to Wisconsin, yeah. So
best
look
of
out.
Luck to you.
Thank you.
I don't know if they have the internet there yet or not. But.
Some parts of it they do. All right. Kevin Patra joined our friends on the Around the NFL podcast. And, you know, we like those guys at the Around the NFL podcast because they talk about cool stuff, but they're not always the highest on Teddy Bridgewater. Kevin Patra, though, tries to set them straight as they discuss the 13 teams who have not won a Super Bowl, which of those 13 teams have the best chance to win their first Super Bowl this year in 2016. Kevin Patra chose the Vikings.
Let's start right now, and what we're going to talk about is which team will win its first Super Bowl in 2017 when the trophy is handed off at Reliance Stadium in Houston. Get excited, everybody. There's 13 teams, which is surprising. You would think there'd be less than 13 out of the 32 NFL teams that have won the Super Bowl, but here's the list, and we, you know, it doesn't count AFL titles, obviously. Bills, Bengals, Browns, Texans, Jaguars, Titans, Cardinals, Falcons, Panthers, Lions, Vikings, Eagles, and the San Diego Superchargers. And for the purpose of this exercise, and we'll start with Kevin Patra here, let's kind of stay away from the Cardinals and Panthers, because I think everyone is kind of, you know, has a feeling that these are two of the top 6 to 8 teams in the league. Patrick, get us going. Besides those two teams, which team in that list of those remaining 11 do you think has the most realistic chance here?
I think I would go with the Minnesota Vikings. I think on the strength of their defense, with Mike Zimmer, I think they could pull off sort of what we saw the last couple years with the Panthers, getting into the playoffs, getting deep into the playoffs on the strength of their defense. I mean, I know you guys in that room aren't huge Teddy Bridgewater fans, but we've seen much worse quarterbacks win Super Bowls. And I think with young core, young front seven in the defense, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks coming into their own, I think this could be a team that is going to fight with the Packers for the NFC North. They'll get into the playoffs as a wild card. They should have beat the Seahawks last year. They almost beat the Cardinals in the regular season on the on a primetime game. And if Teddy Bridgewater hadn't screwed up, they probably could have won that game. So I think this is a young team that's blossoming, and they got added some new pieces in Laquon Treadwell. I think that they're the team out of the other 11 that I would go with.
I think Teddy Bridgewater would need to be better. You said we've seen a lot of teams win Super Bowls with quarterbacks, you know, worse than Teddy Bridgewater. There haven't been that many.
I didn't say a lot. I said we've seen teams with worse quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's happened, but I think he would need
We saw it last year.
Yeah, I think he just would need to take that next step, whether it's to 2015 Andy Dalton or even, you know, just a bordering on a top 10 quarterback. I think you need a guy that's willing to go down the field a little more, or able to go down the field a little more. But I think you're right. I think this is a team that's set up to win now. It's a young team, but they've been together a little while now. And you have Adrian Peterson still kind of at the tail end of his prime. You got to do it before that ends.
You know, this guy's got to take it easy, I think, on Teddy. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't want to improve or doesn't need to improve. You know, Teddy's at the point of his career where he's got to improve in every facet every year. But I mean, the pass protection, we had some issues at times, and he was the starting quarterback on a team that won 11 games. So, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, so thank you, Kevin Patra, for setting Greg Rosenthal and company somewhat straight. Although Greg did come around at the end and kind of affirmed some of what our friend Kevin Patra was saying. Now, the question on this is, I don't think that Coach Zimmer likes it when people pick the Vikings in stuff like this. Like, he wants to fly under the radar, you know?
Yeah, but if you think about it, it is sort of a weird, quirky thing. It's teams that haven't ever won it. Like, I'm assuming the inspiration for this is the Cleveland Cavaliers having won the NBA Finals.
Right.
Teams that haven't ever won it, and not including Carolina and Arizona.
Right.
So, I mean, it's sort of a weird bunch.
Right. By the way, we play both Carolina and Arizona this season, so get your popcorn ready. We play at Carolina in week 3, and then Arizona comes here sometime later in the season. So we'll be playing those two teams. The Vikings, of course, division winners last year, will play every division winner in the NFC, which equals the Redskins, whom the Vikings will play on the road, the Panthers, whom they will play on the road, and then the Arizona Cardinals will come to Minnesota. So, all right, that's it for this edition of the Wobcast. Anything else to empty out of your notebook, Nate, or is that it?
It's empty.
It's all empty. Okay. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We thank you for listening. We're going to be back next week with another edition of the Wobcast, so please continue to check out the website, all the great content. Send us some of your email, because we'll get to some fan mail in next week's show. And remember, if you haven't already, please download the Vikings app. All of your favorite content delivered straight to your mobile device. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. This edition of the Wobcast is over. Have a great weekend.